Senator Dan Patrick of Houston, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Sure. Let's begin with you, since we inadvertently made a little news this week on the Tribune site. I want to confirm from you directly, you are planning to file for re-election.
Yes. I put out my statement in August that I was running for my Senate seat. There was a lot of speculation back then what my plans were.
Right.
And I'm running for District 7 in the Texas Senate.
Now, surely you have heard the same speculation that we in the press have heard, that there are greater designs on your time and energy out in the world. You know, there's been talk about you for comptroller, which you said this week. Not only don't you want, you've endorsed the current.
Yes. If it were open.
You might then run.
No, if it were open and they said, please, I would turn it down.
You would still turn it down.
I would still turn it down.
Well, I have to stop and ask why that is, because that, for a lot of people, seems like a pretty good job to have your hands on so many different levers of government.
I'm a public policy person, number one.
Yeah.
I really like being involved in the future of Texas, as opposed to that job of controller, which is involved in the future also, but that's really a hands-on management job. And I'm a business guy. I manage my business. That's just not my cup of tea. Some people run for controller to set themselves up for other offices one day. I'm not looking at doing anything to set myself up for the future. I'm trying to solve the problems of Texas where I am.
But are you satisfied in the state Senate, and do you not have designs potentially one day on a job larger than this one?
I love the Texas Senate. It's a group of 31 men and women where one person can really make a difference.
Right.
To pass something, you have to get a coalition of the willing to support you. But one person can stop something.
Right.
And this past session, we formed a lot of coalitions. We probably passed out of our office more legislation than any other non-chairman. We moved a lot of important pieces of bill with bipartisan support, like our charter school bill, the first bill on immigration. I mean, that charter school bill passed 31 to nothing. My immigration bill that would clamp down on companies hiring illegals and paying them under the table in cash, 30 to 1. So, you know, I think I found a good rhythm of how to get Republicans and Democrats together on tough issues.
And you like that. You like the body. You like the rhythm of that place and the mood of it.
Yeah.
So if Governor Perry called you and said, you know what, in fact, Senator Hutchison is going to resign, and I've got to appoint somebody to that seat. You've been talked about as a potential appointee to the United States Senate. How about that?
I'll be very honest, Evan. I think the media has made more of my future, including before I even came and sat in my first session of me with designs on the governorship this year or lieutenant governor. I've really not put a plan in place to do any of that.
Right. Well, you can stop that right now by saying that you have no intention of running for those offices, if that's the case.
As I sit here today, and I'm not trying to sound like the politician that says, well, as I sit here today, I have no plans at all to do that.
Right.
If those doors open, then I would consider those things. But a lot of doors have to open. First of all, you have to have some statewide name ID.
Right.
You have to have a lot of money or access to a lot of money.
Right.
So I'm 0-3.
Well,
so
say I would actually argue with you that your statewide name ID is not high. You, because of your radio program and because of your previous life, come into the legislature with a higher name ID than 99% of the people who get elected to office.
Possibly, but there are still a lot of people who are watching this video today that have never heard of Dan Patrick
or
seen
Dan
Patrick.
They think you're the ESPN guy, right?
You're right. I have some people in the legislature that think I'm the... Say, Dan, how do you get down here on the floor when you're just on ESPN?
And by the way, can you get me tickets to the national championship
absolutely.
Game? Let's talk about the current governor, if you don't necessarily want to talk about being the future governor. Let's talk about the current one. You are a Perry guy.
I'm a Perry guy.
You have endorsed Governor Perry in this race. Many Republicans have declined to get involved in this primary. Why not you? Or why are you in this case?
I don't believe that in important situations or important legislation that one should sit on the sidelines. Everybody who's on the sidelines has an opinion, and there's a great whisper campaign going on. I'm not a big person for whispering. You know, say what you believe what you say, and stand by it, win or lose. Governor Perry and I worked very well together this past session. He, in his State of the State, two of the bills that he addressed were mine. The business tax cut was my legislation that he helped me with. And we agree on 95% of the issues. With that said, I'm not anti-K. See, I don't come from this school that if you're for someone, you're against someone. I like K.
You just like him better.
It's not a case of liking him better. Texas is in a pretty good position right now, all things considered. Now, that doesn't mean I agree with Governor Perry on every issue. There are a handful of issues that I've disagreed with. There are a handful of issues that I disagree with Senator Hutchinson on. But I just look at Texas. We created more jobs than 49 other states combined in 08. We do have $8 to $9 billion, depending on what the final number is, in our treasury. We're in better financial shape than any other state. And I don't see a reason to have a $40 million race and an inter-party fight.
But you're going to have one. And the reality is, whether you or anybody else wants there to be that much money spent, the race is on.
The race is on.
Given the fact that it's him versus her,
right,
you think he'd be a better governor. Otherwise, why endorse?
I think that he has done a job worthy of being reelected. And I think that Kay helps Texas in the United States Senate. So I'm sorry that two of them are running
right
against each other. It happens.
If she wins and she becomes the Republican nominee for governor, you'll support her?
Absolutely.
Unqualified.
Unqualified.
Like her better than Bill White?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Evan, the reason I said I'm for Rick but not anti-Kay is if she wins, I want to be ready to stand with her and help her win in November. And now that Bill White's in the race, we're going to have a fight in Harris County. So
it'll be a real fight.
And I'm going to have to play a part in that for either Perry or Kay. And so I'm not one of those who thinks you can tear someone apart and criticize them
right
and then tomorrow say, oh, forget all that. So I'm not going to be anti-Kay.
Right.
I'm just pro-Rick Perry.
You said that there are a few things on which you disagree with the governor. Can you tell me one or two?
Well, we disagreed on the Trans-Texas Corridor. We disagreed on the HPV virus. And originally, we disagreed on the business tax.
What happened when you say originally?
Well, originally, one of the things that I appreciated about the governor was about this time last year, before session, I was in Austin, and I went up to visit him, and I said, Governor, we need to do something about the business tax. And he said, Dan, I think it needs some tweaking, it needs some work, and if you think you can get it done, I'll support you. That really said a lot to me, because I was one of those who was an outspoken opponent of it. I wasn't in office at the time. I had won my primary, but I wasn't in the legislature. But I was an outspoken opponent of it as a business owner. And very often in politics, as you know, Evan, that sometimes when someone opposes someone on an issue, they're not the person given the opportunity or supported to help correct it.
In fact, they're often held away.
Held away. Because no one ever wants to be in a position, well, maybe he was right and I was wrong. And so it really said a lot to me that the governor said, Dan, if you think you can fix it, I'll support it.
And so you made some changes to it?
We made some changes to it. I wanted to make more. We didn't have enough votes on the other side of the aisle.
But you're satisfied at the moment that with the changes you can be comfortable with that business tax?
Well, I'm still not comfortable with it.
That you don't look at it as a point of opposition with the governor.
Oh, no. The reason I don't see it as a point of opposition is because he agrees that we're still going to continue to tweak it, change it, repeal it, replace it. I mean, he's still moving in that direction.
Right.
And the other thing, Evan, I cast almost 5,000 votes this session. I had a 100% voting record, which I'm proud of. Didn't miss a vote. Someone, even my strongest supporters, will find a handful of votes maybe that they disagree with me on.
Yeah.
You know, the governor's been the governor for a long time. And, you know, is he the most pro-life governor we've ever had in the history of Texas? Yes. Maybe in the United States as a governor. Is he pro-business? I believe yes. Look at the jobs we're creating. He led the fight on tort reform. Our budget, all things considered, has been held in check the last several years. So, again, I mean, I agree with those issues.
Senator Hutchinson has an ad up that talks about how Governor Perry has actually governed like a liberal or been more liberal than she would be as governor. Do you see any merit in that claim at all?
No. I'm really not going to comment on her campaign or his campaign. I'm supporting the governor.
Yeah.
I'm not anti-Kay. Let the best person win who runs the best campaign.
And you'll support him. Let's talk about the health of the economy of Texas,
sure,
which you alluded to a few minutes ago. We are heading into a legislative session in 2011 in which, depending upon who you talk to, we're going to have a deficit of $12 billion, $13 billion or more. It's been described as a structural deficit. The last time around, we used federal stimulus money to help us balance our books. This time, no such money is likely to be available. The rainy day fund is somewhere in the $8 billion range.
Right.
It could go down or up a little bit,
right,
but basically that. Do you believe that the way for us to dig out of the ditch that we're fixing to be in is to drain the rainy day fund completely and then ask for cuts from state agencies? Should we take some of that money and ask for deeper cuts? Should we take none of that money and go crazy with cuts through the budget? What's your prescription?
Well, I'm a fiscal conservative, and I believe the government should be smaller. I believe there's enough money in Texas to take care of the people who we need to take care of. I had a meeting just this morning with our new Commissioner of Health and Human Services, Dr. Sees, and I think in our discussion, he would agree, and I would agree with him, that if we change the delivery system of Medicaid dollars, we can take care of all the people we need to take care of, including those who are uninsured. Now, moving forward, just because of the natural growth and because some of those stimulus dollars that were used last session, potentially you could be looking at a $5 billion hole in Health and Human Services.
We have about
alone, because we have about 1.6 of just a higher caseload because of the economy. And then you have 3.8 in stimulus dollars that are probably not going to be replaced. So you're looking at about $5 billion there. And then our education needs continue. And, of course, education and health care are more than 80% of our budget. So I would be one that believes we should look for every cut we can find. And let's just say we could cut the budget. I believe we could find 10 to 12% of waste and programs that are not emergencies that we could cut. You're talking about, of the total all funds budget to your budget, $18 billion.
So you think if you were able to cut 10 to 12% of the budget, no need to drain the rainy day?
No need to drain
it. If you went through or if
I don't think we'll cut it 10 or 12%.
Right.
I think it's more likely that you could cut the budget 3 to 4%. Across the board.
In which case, if that's the case, let's say you're looking at $6 billion in cuts.
Right.
$7 billion in cuts. So would you then go into the rainy day fund and drain the rest there?
I think we're going to have to spend, and it's a year away, so we don't know. Let's see what our revenues are. Let's see if the economy turns around.
Right.
But at this point, I don't think we're going to have to drain it, but I think we're going to have to use part of it. Remember, the property tax cut under House Bill 1 that was passed in 2006 requires the state to continue paying the school districts enough money to buy down that tax rate from $1.50 to $1. Now, some schools have increased it, but we have to make up that gap.
Right.
And that's about $3 or $4 billion every year we have to have going forward.
Right.
You know, you just can't pass a tax cut once. We have to continue to fund that. So if you look at our population and inflation growth, if you look at the Medicaid caseload, if you look at the increased cost of education, we have challenges ahead.
Yeah.
Every time I speak now, Evan, I said this to I had a charter school meeting and an immigration meeting today here in Austin. Our state demographer, Dr. Carl Eschbach, who I think his data is reliable. You should do a story with him if you have not. He projects our population by 2040 is going to be between 35 and 51 million people. That's doubling the population. He figures on the high side. Now, 2040 may seem like a long time in the future. That's 31 years. 31 years ago, Earl Campbell, the Tyler Rose, was a running back for the Houston Oilers. That was yesterday. And here's what I look at everything in terms of a math model. You know, whether it's a business goal or a legislative goal, you can break it down into math. 31 years, doubling our population, that's 15 sessions. We only meet every other year. We only really vote on bills 2 months out of each session. That's 30 months. We have 30 months to solve the problems and take advantage of the opportunities of a state that's going to be the largest in the country. We already today have a larger economy than Russia, than Mexico, than India today, even with a soft economy. We also look at the demographics moving forward. We're going to be a majority Hispanic state by 2025.
Yeah, if not sooner.
If not sooner. Right. You know, we have a majority Hispanic births today, so as those children grow and the current population, as it continues to grow. But our highest dropout rate is in the Hispanic population.
Right.
So we have the largest group of people that are growing in Texas. Also, we have the largest dropout rate in that group. We have got to solve those problems today. I'm vice chair of education and higher ed,
right.
And public education must be an issue that, as a Republican, we must conquer.
Yeah.
But with the Democrats, together, we must work and solve these problems. We cannot move forward with a public education system that has an overall dropout rate of 30%, give or take a few.
Well, let me ask you about that. So Robert Scott, the Commissioner of Education, puts the dropout rate over here.
Right.
Bill Hammond of the Texas Association of Business says that Scott's not telling the truth.
Right.
that the dropout rate is actually much higher.
Right.
Who's right?
I don't think that we have the data to show who's right, but I believe it's north of 30%.
Yeah.
But if we use 30% as a number, I have a meeting about every 6 months with all my superintendents, and we just had ours this week. And I asked them the question, if the dropout rate is 30% across the board, how many of those students can you save? You're not going to save 100% of them, because
right.
some kids are going to drop out and
regardless,
no matter what.
Right.
But how many? And they agreed about two-thirds. It's one of the reasons I passed the charter school bill, Senate Bill 1830. We had a meeting here today on that. I passed it 31-0 out of the Senate when no one had been able to pass a charter school for six sessions. And I did it with Letitia Vanderpute, with Royce West's help, Florence Shapiro's help. We came together because charter schools, we have 40,000 on the wait list right now in Texas. And that's almost more than doubled in 2 years. 53% of the students who go to charter schools are gifted students. We all hear about the KIPP Academies. But over 40% of the students are high-risk dropout students. So we have got, when I look at the future, when you talk about what's Nan's future, I got into politics late in life, in my 50s. My window is short. I'm not a career politician. I don't have a 20 and 30-year plan where I run for this office and in 4 years I'm going to be here. I have a real opportunity, because I'm not going to be here a long time, I have a real opportunity to cast tough votes as a conservative. I'm viewed as the most conservative member of the Senate, but to work with Democrats to solve problems. People are tired of Republicans and Democrats who are worried about their career. They want us to solve problems. And in the Texas Senate, I can't speak for the House, I can't speak for Washington, but in the Texas Senate, where we have 19 Republicans and 12 Democrats, 80% of the time, we come together. I work as well with Democrats as I do with Republicans. In fact, most of the coalitions very often in the Texas Senate are not Republican-Democrat. It's rural right. and urban. It's suburban. John Whitmire, Mario Gallegos, and Rodney Ellis,
right.
we all represent Harris County. We have traffic. We have crime. We have all these issues that maybe rural or the Valley doesn't have. So the coalitions in the Texas Senate are interesting. Now, there are going to be issues like photo voter ID and pro-life issues and other issues that will divide the parties.
Well, and I want to ask you about that, because voter ID was an issue on which the traditions of the Senate and everybody getting along were put to the side, and a vote was taken to overrule the traditional two-thirds required.
Yes.
And so my question to you is, if you're so convinced that people come together in the Senate the majority of the time, why not, on an issue like voter ID, allow the traditions of the Senate to persist? Why veer from it?
Here's the reason.
Yeah.
Because I was getting ready to say at the end of that, my long statement, I apologize for that, was that 80 to 85% of the time we agree and work together really well. But there's that 10 or 15% of the time we disagree. There is a difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. Different views. I respect their views. And they respect our views. And in those areas, you draw the line, you fight in the sand. I believe that if you're the majority, which we are in Texas as Republicans, that you should rule to represent the people who sent you here. The majority of Texas have decided on a Republican governor, lieutenant governor, go down the line, majority House, which I think will add 5-6 seats this session, and Senate. I don't like what the Democrats are doing in Washington, but they are exercising their power. The Republicans have not exercised their power and not doing so in the past in a way I think they should have done with the numbers is one of the reasons they got in trouble in Washington, D.C. They didn't get the job done that the people expected them to do. Once you take power, people expect you to deliver. Again, I don't agree with Barack Obama on any issue except charter schools, but he is trying to deliver. He's using his might.
Right.
I didn't agree with Ted Kennedy on any issue, but he was passionate about what he believed in. We need more conservatives and more Republicans. So when you say, why did we change the rules? First of all, it's an arbitrary rule. 21 votes, we need a supermajority of two-thirds to bring a bill to the floor. There are only 19 Republicans. So that means on every bill we bring to the floor, we have to get two Democrats.
Unless you go ahead and elect two more Republicans.
And that's not going to happen in the near future, I don't think. Maybe one seat changes. My point is, if there's something the people of Texas want us to pass as the majority party, if we're going to stick to it takes 21 votes and we only have 19, because I would turn this around when you say, well, why don't you let this work? The Democrats drew the line in the sand. I don't argue with them in doing it. They drew the line in the sand. We're staying together as 11 votes to block. So if we're going to pass photo voter ID, we lowered it, and we had that right and that power. I believe, as you know, in the first session, my first day, I argued to change the rules. I believe that it should not take 21 votes. I believe it should take 18 votes, which is about 60%, the U.S. Senate, the magic 60. I think we should require 18 votes to pass legislation. I think the hurdle is too high for the Democrats today because only 12 members, I mean, if they only had to get six more Republicans, they could pass more legislation. And Republicans then could pass the bills that the people want them to pass. And I would say that even if Democrats were in charge, if the Democrats one day become the majority party again in Texas, and they probably will one day, hopefully not for a decade or so, but if they become the majority party again and they have the majority of senators, I would expect them to represent the majority of people of Texas. So we need to lower that bar so we can pass legislation.
Senator Patrick, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, very good.